First, we're joined by Susan Colon. She's not the first one in her family to lose a job. Here's how she begins her book.
January 2009, Hudson County, New Jersey. You know what you have to do now, my mother tells me. You have to put up soup. Put up soup. That's what my family says when times get tough. Some people batten down the hatches, others go to the mattresses. Whatever your family's code phrase is, it means bracing yourself and doing whatever will sustain you through rough going until things get better. In my family, we put up soup.
Susan Colon calls her book Cherries in Winter, My Family's Recipe for Hope in Hard Times. She wrote it after she lost her job as a magazine writer and editor and started sorting through an old collection of family recipes with handwritten notes attached. Her project turned into a manuscript that's part cookbook and part memoir of five generations of her family. She told Anne Strangechamps that learning about the struggles of her immigrant great-great-grandmother and remembering her own mother's hard times during the Great Depression gave her the strength to face her own troubles. Anne asked how food became part of the story.
What was the first recipe you tried?
Let me see. The first recipe was probably my great-aunt Nettie's clam chowder because I grew up eating the clam chowder. My grandparents lived near an inlet, and so my grandpa, who was like the Ernest Hemingway of the Bronx, would go out with a fishing pole, and he'd just cast his line and reel in bluefish and broil them and all of that, and we would go clamming. And so clam chowder was, you know, I've been eating clams since I was little. This was not an acquired taste for me. This was comfort food for me. This was part of my family's food. So that, for sentimental reasons, I wanted to experience that idea of being with my grandpa again. So I made the clam chowder, and it was as good as I remember.
Your grandpa was unusual in that he'd cooked for himself and cooked for his family for a long time. How did he learn how to cook?
Well, his mother died when he was very young, when he and his brother were very young. And his stepmother was a woman who, as she put it, men should know how to do all things well. And so she just decided to teach my grandpa, Charlie, and his brother, George, how to do things that normally would have been, quote-unquote, back then, woman's work. So she taught them all about how to find the best cuts of meat from the butcher, you know, what to ask for. And she taught them about, you know, the thread count in good sheets. And she also taught them how to cook because she said, you never know. You know, you never know when you're going to need skills like this. And as it happened, my grandpa's first wife died of influenza, and he had two small children, and he really needed those skills when he was a young bachelor. So he learned how to cook from an early age.
Now, this is the same grandpa who had gone through World War I, and there's a story you tell that he used to eat raw potatoes?
Yes, yes. My grandpa actually, like a lot of young patriotic men in that era, lied about his age to get into the war. I think he was 15 or 16. You know, you needed to be older than that. You needed to be 18. But they took him, and he went to war. His older brother was in the war as well. And when he was shipped overseas, he was in a lot of skirmishes, you know, got shot at. He got gassed. He had a lifelong cough from being gassed in the war. And during one such skirmish, he found himself hiding in a French barn with other members of his troop that had survived this battle. They hid there away from the enemy soldiers, and when they woke up, he found a bunch of rats nesting against him because he was warm, so he chased them away. And then they went looking for food, and all they could find were potatoes still in the ground, so they dug them up. And he would say to me, you know, whenever we were making mashed potatoes, which, since he was Irish, was very frequently, he would always take a bite out of a raw one, and he said, try it. You know, so I tried it one day, and I thought, oh, God, this is terrible. And he said to me, oh, you know, this is the way I ate them in France. And I asked my mom about that later, and she said, yeah, well, you know, he almost got killed in France, and this is how he survived.
I can imagine this would really put into perspective whatever feelings of privation you were having as a result of having been laid off. I mean, you weren't at the point where you had to eat raw potatoes yet.
No, certainly not. Certainly not. I've always been very cognizant of the fact that I have, perhaps out of any previous generation of my family, done very well, comparatively speaking. You know, I'm not exactly ready to retire by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, when you get laid off, and I think that there are probably hundreds of thousands of Americans who can identify with this feeling, there's this fear of the unknown, a loss of identity. A lot of fears come out of the woodwork. You know, am I ever going to work again? I hear about so many other people getting laid off. And, you know, not being the youngest person on the block, shall we say, that's another thing not exactly in my favor. It was all of these things that I thought, my goodness, this is, you know, this is a really scary time. So on the one hand, I thought, well, I'm doing okay. But on the other hand, I was really trying to maintain that equilibrium in the face of an onslaught of fearful news that was just terrifying everybody I knew, including me. Hearing these stories and finding out how my family had gotten through hard times was a major perspective check for me in the positive.
There are a couple of stories that I think are just such valuable stories to have maybe grown up with. One is the title story, Cherries in Winter. Do you want to tell me where that comes from?
Yes. It's one of my favorite stories as well. I loved hearing this from my mother because she was there, you know, when this happened. The idea that they were broke but never poor was the way my Nana maintained a state of mind when things got difficult, that all was not lost. She figured that once she started thinking of herself as poor, she was going to remain that way. Whereas the word broke implies a temporary situation. You know, we're broke for now, and now maybe years long, but we'll, you know, we'll get by and then we'll get better. So when things were a little bit better, she was working at the Coliseum in New York in the middle of Columbus Circle, and my mom was modeling at the time, doing a little bit of modeling, and she would work as a model at the car show, say. You know, she was the attractive woman draped over the car. And after work, the two of them would go to this place, this store, where the man sold, like, fancy fruit, you know, like beautiful candies and fancy fruit and things like that. And in the middle of the winter, they would go and get these cherries because he would get this very small quantity of Bing cherries in. And, you know, today when fruit is shipped out of season from all over the world to us, it's a big wake-up call to find out that, no, actually, strawberries aren't meant to be had year-round. They actually were flown in from thousands of miles away. We don't really know about things being in season or out of season anymore. But back then, and this was in the late 1950s, the idea of having cherries in the wintertime was just astonishing little luxury that you could have. So my Nana bought them. One day she spent a little bit of extra money, which my grandpa could never understand. You know, why are you paying more for cherries in the wintertime? You can have them in the summer, you know. And she said, you just don't understand. And, you know, they went, my Nana and my mom, to Central Park this one winter afternoon when it wasn't too cold out and they could sit on a bench. And my Nana said to her, is there anything better than sitting in the middle of Manhattan in Central Park eating cherries in the wintertime? And I just thought, well, you know, yeah, it's the little things that keep you. Sometimes you have to spend a little bit more to keep yourself from feeling like less.
Susan Colon is the author of Cherries in Winter, My Family's Recipe for Hope in Hard Times. She talked with Anne Strandchamps.